I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
George Orwell. George Orwell is 1984 immediately in the minds of American readers. However, George Orwell has a backstory, and I welcome Professor Peter Stansky, the Francis and Charles Field Professor of History Emeritus at Stanford University, whose new book is about George Orwell, a.k.a. Eric Blair, The Socialist Patriot, George Orwell and War. This takes us from George Orwell's early days, experiencing the First War as a schoolboy, all the way to his early days in the Cold War before his untimely death. Professor, congratulations and a very good evening to you. He's born 1903 in India. Why was his family in India? And then we'll speak of his magical mother. Good evening to you.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm delighted to be with you and talk about George Orwell and my recent book about him. His father, who was, the 10th child of a vicar, was a civil servant in India and actually was in the opium. The British government cultivated opium in India up until 1919, but it was illegal to consume in India, and it was cultivated in order to be sold to the against their wishes, and then that's a whole other story, to be sold to China. So Orwell he had an older sister, Marjorie, and his parents were in India. But in fact, his mother, with her two, with Marjorie and Eric, of course, he was born Eric Blair, came to England when Orwell was, I've forgotten exactly, 6 or 7 months old. So in fact, he was only briefly in India, but of course, he would return when he was a police officer in Burma from 1922 to 1927. And his mother, who was half French, her family was in Burma, and he had connections with India and Burma. But that's where he was born. And he was born into sort of the official classes. Sometimes he's characterized as an outsider, which I think is inaccurate. As he said himself, he was a member of the lower upper middle class, which meant that he was a member of the upper middle class, but without money. But still, the way things happen in England, he had class status. He was part of the official classes. And in fact, the family, by his generation, the family money had more or less disappeared. But the money, and again, there's great interest in this at the moment, the money in the family came from his great-grandfather, Charles Blair, who was a slave owner and profited from slavery in Jamaica.
Orwell is immediately, we'll call him Orwell. His name is Eric Blair, and everybody calls him Eric for most of his life. Orwell is keen on class throughout all of his writing, throughout all of his life in England and in Burma, in India. Certainly during the war, class is everything to him. And early on, his parents determine that he's a bright child and move to introduce him to a new private school, public school called in England, St. Cyprian's. What was important about St. Cyprian's in the development of...
Well, I think they call it a prep school. The prep school is the school that a boarding school that people go to from, you know, extraordinarily early age, 8 to 13. And then at 13, the natural succession is to go to a so-called public school, which, of course, is a misleading name because, in fact, they're intensely private. They're public and they're open to anybody who can be admitted and pay the tuition. But he went at half tuition. And his family, as I said, was not well off, to this comparatively new school called St. Cyprian's on the Sussex coast. And he wrote in the 40s, probably in the 40s, it's not quite clear. He wrote a famous essay about how horrible it was called Such Were the Joys, a line from William Blake, ironically used as the title, where I argue in the book, and you know, there's so much written about Orwell that these perceptions aren't necessarily new, but I argue in the book that the importance of both the world wars, the First and Second World War, to Orwell haven't been sufficiently emphasized. But not only these schools existed, well, to give members of the upper middle class or the middle class and the upper classes elite education, but also to train them to be servants of the state, and in many cases. And despite Orwell's intense criticism of the school, justified in large extent, I think he received a good education. But actually, in his essay, Such Were the Joys, he was at the school from, if I remember the dates correctly, 1912 to 1917. So he was at the school during the first three years of the First World War. But surprisingly, he writes very little about the war in Such Were the Joys. But at the time of the Second World War, he wrote a wonderful short essay called My Country, Right or Left, in which he points out how imbued he is with militarism and patriotism, that he bought a rifle when he was 10, that he wore a sailor suit. So these schools... indoctrinate is perhaps too strong, but certainly shape their students, I think, to be patriots and potential servants of the British state. And of course, in a way, the British Empire, though in trouble, couldn't have been more celebrated or intense than during the Edwardian period. When Orwell was a child and adolescent. And then also in the book, but it's in the earlier book that was published in 1972, The Unknown Orwell, and I discovered, my collaborator and I discovered Orwell's first two publications as a schoolboy. He wrote these almost embarrassingly patriotic poems about people have to enlist. If you don't enlist, you're cowards. And actually, they were partially inspired by a cousin of his who was killed in the first year or so, first months or so of the First World War. So the second poem, which was written on the death of Kitchener later, he might then be old enough to have doubts about the war. But I think what I argue is that just the going to the school during the Edwardian period and during the first 3 years of the First World War shaped him as somebody who was intensely patriotic. He loved England. He said he's a patriot. He's not a nationalist. And the difference being that if you're a patriot, you think your country's the best in the world, but you're not interested in making other countries like your country. If you're a nationalist, you think your country's the best in the world, but you want to convert other countries to be like you. And, you know, and what's frequently forgotten, he didn't want to upset or destroy the Soviet regime in Russia. He just wanted to prevent it from spreading its influence in East Europe and Eastern Europe and elsewhere. But his school days, I think, were very important, despite his problems with the school and the very powerful headmistress whom I met when I was working on the book. You said, poor Eric, I tried to be nice to him. I think she somewhat exaggerated. That this was incredibly powerful in, you know, I think we're all influenced by our early days and our early education.
George Orwell, a.k.a. Eric Blair, leaves St. Cyprian's with a scholarship that eventually puts him at Eton. He leaves Eton in December of 21. When we come back, George Orwell and his political opinions in The Socialist Patriot by Peter Stansky. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bowers.
The new year brings new health goals and wealth goals. Protecting your identity is an important step. Your info is in endless places that could expose you to identity theft, leading to lost funds. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's restoration specialists will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Resolve to make identity, health, and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose Masterforce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from Masterforce today. Check out all our Masterforce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save